Good evening,
Love
everybody.
Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Mac, and you are listening to Mac's Musings. This is my second attempt here, because Blog Talk Radio wouldn't even let me get into their stream. But be that as it may, I'm going to try to call my guest here, and hopefully I will be able to get a hold of him. And we will be talking to him shortly. His name is Tony Masiello. So here we go. Should be dialing soon. And hopefully we will be talking to him. And dialing.
Hello?
Here we go. Hello, Tony. Can you hear me all right?
I sure can.
Okay, goody. That means we're on the air. Finally. Okay, so how old were you when you realized that you wanted to be in the film business?
Ooh, gosh. When I was a young kid, it was the 80s. It's kind of the video boom was going on. And like a lot of kids of the era, I was completely obsessed with the video store and going to the video store and renting movies, specifically horror films. And, it was a huge hobby immediately. You know, I started collecting tapes as a kid and stuff like that. But I didn't really get the bug until I kind of discovered special effects makeup. And in particular, Tom Savini and his work. I think a lot of us kids in the 80s were very inspired by him. And so at first I wanted to be a special makeup effects artist, but that seemed completely, you know, like a pipe dream type of goal. And, I eventually got a camcorder from my grandfather and I started making some, little short films, but it wasn't until I was probably in my early 20s, graduated high school and was working a full-time job. And my mom came to me and she said, why don't you try pursuing, a career in film? You love movies so much, you make these little movies. Why don't you try to pursue a career in film? And so I thought about it and, started attending school, studying digital video production. And that was kind of when I first kind of knew, maybe this could be a viable thing. I never thought it'd be more than a hobby, honestly, at the time. But that's kind of really when I first kind of got into it.
Well, that's always nice when the family, any member of your family, when they give you inspiration or even just a few kind words here and there.
Oh, for sure. My mom was extremely supportive of all my crazy endeavors as a kid.
Aw, well, that's nice. One other thing I know about you is that you're a musician. Now, do you have a band or... Yeah. Oh, you do. What's the name of your band?
Well, I've done numerous bands over the years. Probably the most famous band, and not really famous at all, I was in was called Gertrude Stein. And we did a small tour, put out a record, and was in another band called Cat Shit that put out a few albums. And I've been in various bands over the years. That's kind of a jump between film and bands. When you see lapses in my... filmography and stuff like that, it's because I was probably focusing on music during those times.
That's true of a few people in the film business. They love music or they actually tour and things like that. So it's not unusual, but I do like to mention it because it's always interesting to me, whatever people... Yeah, whatever other things people have going on, I always find interesting. So I wanted to start earlier. I won't go over too many old things, but I did want to mention these two because, and I'm lumping them together because it's the same franchise. In 2004, Shrek 2, and 2007, Shrek the Third. So what was it like working on those two and being a part of such a big franchise?
Yeah, so I worked for a while. I was working for a company that was doing 3D conversion on big Hollywood films. And we had received the contract to do the Shrek movies. They were about to put out the third film in 3D in the theaters. And we were commissioned to do the first couple films as well at the same time. And I will say, you know, I kind of cut my chops on the company there working on those Shrek films. And I remember part three in particular, there was a shot that, you know, that one thing people don't realize is some of these movies are literally finished hours before they hit theaters. And this movie was no different. And I remember working on a particularly difficult shot that was taking forever to get done and all the way up to almost deadline time. And, you know, it was really cool working on those big Hollywood movies. But it wasn't really a creative job, you know. We were placing stuff in depth, so it wasn't really like I got to be creative or anything like that. But it was cool working in the industry, and I got to work on a lot of, you know, really big budgeted films.
Well, and it did help you with experience, and it pads your resume.
For sure. Well, and it also helped, you know, make my bank account a little bigger so I could look into, you know, starting to make my own movies as well. So,
well, yeah, the big bank account, well, even if it's a small bank account, it always helps.
Yeah, small. For sure.
So you did a few other ones that we'll just go over shortly. You did mm-hmm. Green Hornet in 2011.
Yep.
And I'm just lumping them together because they both have the name Green in it. And you also did Green Lantern. So
yeah.
What was it like working on those two?
You know what? Pretty much the same experience as the mm-hmm. other 3D films. I mean, I'll be quite honest. I'm not a big fan of modern Hollywood movies. I really haven't been a fan of modern Hollywood probably since the 90s. So, you know, to me, it was always just a day job. I mean, honestly, I, you know, it was cool working in those teams and working on, you know, products that I knew millions of people were going to watch, which was really neat, you know, but ultimately mm-hmm. it was just a job to me. I didn't really take much creative, like I said, I didn't have any creative input. It was more like sitting there and painting stuff for the most part. So, I mean, I will say, though, Green Hornet was one of the only works I worked on that I actually, of the big Hollywood films I worked on, that actually went to the theater to go see in 3D.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it and just going, gosh, what a piece of crap this is. I thought the movie was terrible. So that was the first and the last of the big budget films I worked on that I actually went to the theater to go see.
I'm just laughing because you know, some people, of course, wouldn't agree because some people did like Green Hornet.
Sure.
But it's just funny when people that are involved with the film say that kind of thing. I mean, it happens all the time. Even people that act in a lot of the big budget movies will say, man, that was a piece of crap.
Right.
And it's really sad.
Well, you know,
when there's – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I always had a theory that a lot of the films that we would work on and put into 3D, you know, we did a post-conversion. So the films were already shot, and we were actually post-converting them to 3D. And I always had a theory, because it seemed like almost all the movies we did were really horrible. And I just had this theory that, you know, the studios knew they were going to lose money on these crappy movies, and so they would put them into 3D to try to get more butts in the seats and charge more money for tickets, so they could try to make their investments back on these bad movies.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's what it is with a lot of them. And
for sure.
when I have people like you on the show, I've said it often times that sometimes these really big budget movies, they spend, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars, and the movie ends up being a piece of crap. But yet, mm-hmm. an independent filmmaker who's only got like 10 or 20,000 can make a halfway decent film. I mean, even if it's not great, because I don't know if you are aware or not, but I'm a semi-professional reviewer.
Right.
And so when I review movies, I consider all of that. I mean, no,
for
if
sure.
your movie is crap, I'm not going to say it's good. But I don't actually look at it that way. I don't say this movie's a piece of crap like what some people do. That's not a true review. I
Right.
will say the things that I like about it, and I will say the things that I didn't like about it. And I'll even point out stuff that, okay, well, I don't like that, but if you like that, well, then you'll love this movie. Because there was one movie where it was a repetitive violence thing. I don't care about violence. I see violence, you know, all the time in the movies. That doesn't bother me. But it was a repetitive thing. It was had to do with stigmata, and they were putting nails through these women's palms, and then they'd put them through their feet, and then they just kept doing that. It was done like 20 times, and I just got tired of seeing the same, you know, type of violence. So it was actually, you know, kind of boring. And
right.
when you're considered as supposed to be a horror movie, you know, that's a cardinal sin to bore somebody, especially in
worst.
A horror movie. So I got so bored with that, and I put that in my review. I said, I guess they couldn't think of any other way to kill somebody except to put nails into their hands and their feet, and then they'd gut them through the side because it was supposed to be, you know, like Jesus. And so they'd gut them in the side. And that was it. They just kept doing that over and over and over again. So I put that in there that, you know, I didn't like it. But then I said, but hey, you know, if you like seeing the same thing over and over and over again, then you'll love this film.
For sure.
Because I know that not everybody's everybody's not alike. And not everybody likes the same things in movies. And some of the reviewers, they forget to take that into account. Hey, not everybody likes the same thing you do.
Right.
And another little tidbit I'll give you that a lot of people don't know is a lot of those reviewers don't even watch those movies. They fast forward through them. And if you watch the movie before they read their review, you'll be able to tell. Because it's very telling. If you actually
I've seen
see the movie
plenty
first.
Of reviews like that, yeah, where you can tell they clearly did not watch the movie, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's very irritating because me, if I get contracted, then I'm going to watch the whole thing, even if it's terrible, and I want to pluck my eyes out with a fork as I'm watching it. I'm going to watch it because I'm getting paid to do that. And so I'm going to do that. I'm not going to fast forward through it because I want to be able to give a true review. So I'm sorry to go off on that on your show. We're supposed to be talking about you. So we'll get back to you now. Sorry about that. Okay, so in 2013, you did, or at least that's what it says on IMDb, you did a thing called High 8, which stands for Horror Independent 8. And you did a lot of stuff on that. You were gaffer, director, producer, editor. You did digital transfers, and you even did the titles. And you were involved with a segment called The Tape. So tell us about that experience.
Yeah, so the way High 8 actually came about, I had this Facebook group, which I still have online if anyone's interested in checking it out. It's called SOV The True Independence. And it was a group I made for a project I was working on at the time and I'm still working on, which is now a web series all about shot-on-video horror films and the history of them. And so I had a lot of shot-on-video horror directors and fans in this little group. And, you know, we would chat all types of things about shot-on-video movies. And this movie called VHS was making the rounds at the time. And one of the fans, a fan named Mayhew Hoons, actually recommended, he's like, wouldn't it be cool if all you shot on video movie guys got together and made your own version, you know, your own kind of VHS-style movie? And so a couple of the filmmakers in the group, Brad Sykes and Tim Ritter, thought it was a great idea and decided to roll with it and start producing it. And I was friends with both of them, and so they both kind of shared with me, hey, we're working on this movie. We have this concept. It's High 8, Horror Independent 8. We want to have 8 directors of shot-on-video directors to come together and make this anthology film. And at the time, they only had 7 directors. So just being a big fan and a big advocate and a lover archivist of shot on video movies, I begged mm-hmm. them to let me do the eighth segment. And so they reluctantly agreed, even though I think they were happy with the end results. But they were nervous, you know, because I was a I'd never really done anything professional directing wise at that point. And so, I made a little short called The Tape, which was kind of my my little love letter to shot on video movies, as well as a little bit of social commentary on the fandom of shot on video movies and VHS collecting in general. And it was a pretty cool experience. I mean, I had a great time making the movie with my cast and crew. I mean, everything was out of my own pocket. I mean, I probably shot my short for maybe about $400 or $500, all out of pocket, with a complete amateur cast and crew. I mean, pretty much friends and family. I only had one notable real actor in it, who was a shot-on-video actress named Andrea Adams, who was in a couple early SOV movies like Blood Lake and The Ripper, and so which was really cool having her. And so, yeah, so we made High 8, you know, we made that short, and I'll be honest, though, unfortunately, you know, when it was released, they ended up making it fake widescreen, so the movie looked bad, and there was some issues with one of the producers, so they actually changed some of my music in my particular cut. So, unfortunately, people don't really get to see what I intended as a director in that movie, and which is kind of sad. But it was a great starting point for me, and I'm very happy to have had that opportunity. I mean, I got my name in Fangoria magazine, which was huge for me. You know, I grew up reading that magazine as a kid, you know, and so to see my name really big in Fangoria magazine was really awesome. And, you know, so it was a good starting point for sure, you know. But unfortunately, I'm not really happy with the edit that was released of that movie.
That part's sad, but at least you got your name out there, and I'm sure that it helps you to get other things. And was like the next year, I think. I'm sorry. Were you going to say something else?
Oh, no. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, there was a slight overlap there. I think it was the next year, you did a TV series documentary called Plastic Movies Rewound, The Story of the 80s Home Video Boom. And you were like the camera operator, I think, on 6 episodes. So what was it like doing that show?
So that was actually, I'm trying to remember the guy's name. Oh, Mike Malloy. Mike Malloy was making that series, and he reached out to me because he knew I was in San Diego, and one of the, I'm forgetting the gentleman's name, but the editor who used to run, I believe it was called Video Store Magazine, which was a magazine, a trade magazine they would send to all the video stores talking about the latest trends in video and stuff like that, actually lived in San Diego as well. So I was kind of commissioned to go and record this interview with him. And it was really fun interviewing him. He's a really nice guy. And like I said, I'm a huge fan of VHS and stuff like that, and also video stores. That was one of my first jobs, was working in a video store, and probably one of my favorite jobs I've ever had. And, you know, so it was really cool talking to him and picking his brain, you know. I've never seen the series. I don't even know if it was ever released, unfortunately. I'd be interested in seeing it, but I don't think they ever did release it as far as I know.
Well, that's a shame.
For sure. That's the way it goes sometimes, you know.
Yeah, a lot of times it happens that way. And with movies, too. Like, they'll be gone altogether. And sometimes they'll resurface, like, 10, 20 years later. I mean, that happens all the time, too.
Oh, we've done that with my DVD company, yeah, you know.
Yeah. And for the listeners, we are going to be getting to that and not too long from now. I did want to ask you about your acting, because I noticed that you have like 3 acting credits, and usually, not all the time, but usually when there's a low number of those, it means that the people don't like acting. So you acted in Hobgoblins 2, The Grindsploitation, and also what was that last one? Oh, Purveyors of Blood. So do you like acting, or you just do it if it's necessary?
Yeah, so I'm personally not, I prefer to be behind the camera. Most of the roles that I've done in front of the camera have been to help out the project. So like Hobgoblins 2, which was my first, I guess, professional acting role. I mean, it was a 35 millimeter film. I mean, I did a lot of jobs on Hobgoblins 2. I used to actually run the director's fan club, a director named Rick Sloan, who I'm a huge fan of, and a friend as well. But, you know, I was working on Hobgoblins 2, doing lots of different things, building sets, you know, creating props for the film and stuff like that, just being a general PA. And someone didn't show up to play a role, so, you know, Rick said, hey, you want to play a doctor? And I was like, oh, yeah, of course, I'd love to play a doctor. And it's funny, though, because, you know, I was also an extra in the movie. And in other scenes, I play a mental patient. So in some scenes, I'm a doctor. In some scenes, I'm a mental patient. And me and my friends like to joke, you know, if you watch the first hour of that movie, I'm in it quite a few times in the background, and you can pretty much play a drinking game of Spot Tony, and you'll be drunk pretty fast. And Purveyors of Blood, that was made by a good friend of mine, a friend named Romelli, who's a burlesque artist as well as just a regular artist in general, very talented young lady. And she's a good friend of mine. We kind of grew up making movies around the same time. I think we both kind of helped inspire each other. And she had been working on this vampire movie for a while called Purveyors of Blood. And the project had kind of fallen apart. She had lost some cast members and stuff like that. And but I'd seen some of the footage she shot, and I thought it looked really good. I was, like, really excited on what I saw from her. And so I tried to push her to finish the movie. I was probably, like, the big advocate for that movie being finished. I was like, you got to finish it. You got to finish it. So, of course, she's like, well, you got to play a role in it, you know. So she made me play, you know, it was supposed to be this sadomasochistic guy who's really into weird, rough sex. And, you know, I'm being that I'm not much of an actor, you know, I'm like, well, can I do a hillbilly accent? And she's like, sure. So I played it as a hillbilly, which made me a little more comfortable playing the role, you know, actually playing kind of more of a character. The Grindsploitation Cannibal Vampire Callgirl Hookers from Outer Space Part 3, that was a movie I shot. So I just did a little cameo in it, you know, as a guy who gets ripped in half. You know, a lot of times, you know, I've done a lot of other little kind of bit parts and things, and usually it's because no one else wants to play that role. Someone doesn't want to touch the disgusting stuff or something like that. So, you know, I'd always be stuck playing those little roles that no one wants to play. But for the most part, I'm not really into acting, but I'm not opposed to acting either. I mean, I'm always for helping out people in indie films. So if I can help someone by doing an acting role, you know, I'd be happy to do it for them.
Well, that's nice that you're willing to help out. I did want to go over a couple of more things, because this one, a few of my friends are involved in it, so I did want to bring this one up. Clownado, you did the visual effects for it, so just talk about that a little bit.
You know, I'll be honest, I don't remember doing visual effects on Clownado. I've done visual effects for a few of Todd Sheets' films. I did some visual effects for Dreaming Purple and Neon, as well as House of Forbidden Secrets. And I know at one time I was talking to Todd about possibly working on Clownado. And, you know, if I did do something for it, I honestly don't remember. I don't think I did, though. I think Todd was just nice and kind of gave me a credit, even though I didn't work on that one. But Todd's a good friend, and, you know, he one of my idols growing up. I mean, I grew up watching Todd Sheets movies, and they were very inspirational to me. We actually just had him on our podcast the other week, which was really cool, talking about some of his early work. And you know, Todd's a great guy, and I might be doing some more visual effects on one of his other upcoming projects. So, you know, as far as the visual effects stuff goes, you know, it's something that I have a little bit of talent for, not a ton, but I always say I have a little bit of talent for it. And I'm always happy to help out, you know, filmmaking friends whose work I admire, especially people like Todd and people like Tim Ritter and some of these other filmmakers that I've worked with. You know, it's more out of the love for the work, you know.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, now some of the stuff that I have, the, you know, information, it's not always concise and complete, and sometimes, like with this one, it never happened. I had that a few times with former guests where I'd say, so what about this movie? And there was one where the guy said, I was never in that movie. He was not only never in the movie, he hadn't even said that he was going to be in the movie, but somehow it made it onto his IMDb.
Right. We used to laugh, and we used to call IMDb the inaccurate movie database. Because there's so much misinformation on there, you know, and because it's user submitted, so there's always room for mistakes and whatnot. You know, I don't even, most of my movies aren't even on IMDb, actually. You know, I should probably go on there eventually and add them, but, you know, I'm like, whatever.
Well, yeah, because what's on there is actually good enough, and especially if it has big-name films, because then it gets people, you did this, and, oh, you did that, maybe I'll check out some of your other stuff. And that is how people get interested, because they look somebody up and they think, oh, well, I didn't even know this person was in that. Or they look up the movie, and I'm sure you've done this yourself. You're like, who is that person playing that part in that movie? So you look up the movie, then you look up the part, and then you, I'm going to have to watch for this person because I really, really like them. And that happens a lot. I've done that because I think, I like this person. I'm going to look for their stuff. But I do want to mention some that, you know, you wanted to make sure they were mentioned, which, you know, of course, I totally understand. Natasha Knighty's Boudoir of Blood. So tell us all about that one.
Well, that's my latest movie. I actually just finished editing it yesterday. After a very long day of editing, I finally finalized Natasha Knighty's Boudoir of Blood. And pretty much the concept for that is, if you remember the old show USA Up All Night, it's pretty much kind of an homage to shows like that. So what it is it's a fake satellite TV show. It's satellite TV, so you can curse, you can have nudity, blood, all that fun stuff. And of this horror host showing this movie, a bad movie by a director named Fred Olin Wood, a movie called Tales from the Mausoleum Part 2. And it's actually a direct sequel to one of my previous movies, Zombarella's House of Horrors. The joke being that, you know, Zombarella's House of Horrors, she watches Tales from the Mausoleum Part 1. Natasha Knighty, she's watching Tales from the Mausoleum Part 2. So the joke is the host changes each time, but the movie only goes up in sequels. It's kind of a stupid joke, but so we just finished that. And this one, where Zombarella was more mainly my work along with my good friend Tim Ritter, who helped me finish that one up. This one is actually more of a collaboration with a ton of different filmmakers. So in this one, we have shorts from Jeff Kirkendall, who's probably best known for his work with the Polonia brothers. We have a short by Ron Ford, who's another veteran of the shot on video world. You know, I'm a huge Ron Ford fan, honored getting to work with him. And then we have a short by myself. And then, you know, we have all the fake commercials. So it's one thing, I don't know if I mentioned that, but, you know, one thing I really wanted to do is have all the commercial breaks. Because to me, when I was a kid watching USA Up All Night, part of the most memorable things of watching that show were all the cheesy 1-900 sex ads and the psychic phone ads and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we try to kind of recreate that with this. And this time around, we had a lot of different actors and filmmakers make a bunch of the ads for us as well. So Tim Ritter came back and did a couple ads for us. Joseph Vogely, Madeline Deering, Rebecca Reinhardt. We had a bunch of great talented people really help out with this one. And I'm so excited for people to see this movie. I think if you miss things like USA Up All Night in the 90s and that kind of style of filmmaking and just fun types of shows, I think this is the type of movie for you, and you really like it.
Oh, I love that type of stuff. And especially when there's like coming attractions where they make little snippets of fake movies. They're not real movies, but it's supposed to be a movie that's going to be coming out, and they have it at the beginning because it's supposed to be like going to see it at the old movie theaters and the drive-ins. And do you
have we did a lot of that.
Coming attraction? Oh, okay, good.
Oh, yeah, there's,
like
there's fake trailers. There's fake commercials for fake TV shows that don't exist. You know, there's all sorts of, there's even products, you know, so there's even hot sauce products and energy drinks and all sorts of goofy, fun commercials.
I have to mention this one because I don't know if you've ever seen it, but, and hopefully I won't get in trouble for mentioning it, but there's this movie called Retard Dead. And dead is like capitalized because they're dead and they're retarded. And yes, it's not PC, but when you see it, it's like so funny. And it's supposed to be. I mean, the song alone is worth watching the movie for. Have you ever seen this film?
I've not seen it. No, I've heard of it, though. I mean, with a title like that, yeah, you don't forget that title when you hear it.
So the song that goes with it, it's worth the price of admission. I won't sing the whole thing, obviously, but I won't even sing it. I'm just going to say the words. Retarded, retarded. If you watch this movie, you are retarded.
Nice.
And there's another part of this song that says, I just watched this movie and I realized that I would rather have been lobotomized.
Nice.
Yeah, so
I have this theory that movies with theme songs, you know, for the most part, most movies that have theme songs are so good, you know. I mean, I'm a huge fan of movies that have their own theme songs in them.
Well, especially when they go along with the movie, and they're basically telling you, you're a moron if you watch this movie. you just paid good money. There's even a part in the song about that, about how much money you paid to watch that stupid film that you just watched.
Nice.
So they're poking fun at themselves. I love that kind of thing.
Nice, yeah.
Okay, now we may go back to some films after talking about your label, but I wanted to make sure that we start talking about that now because we got like 25 minutes. I mean, I don't think you'll talk for 25 minutes, but you never know, you might. So it's www.sovhorror.com, and I saw on your Facebook that your first shot on film release is going to be coming out on September the 13th, which is Michael Lucas's 1988 cult classic Blood Orgy of the Leather Girls, and it's supposed to have lots of special features. So tell us about that particular one and then any ones that are going to be coming out. And, of course, go ahead and tell us about the label itself as well.
Yeah, so I'll start off, with Blood Orgy of the Leather Girls. They're our first film release. So as you can tell from the title of our company, SOV Horror, we specialize for the most part in shot-on-video horror films. Huge fan of shot-on-video horror films. But I had an opportunity to pick up Blood Orgy of the Leather Girls, and I'm a big fan of the movie. It's an insane, fun, crazy little film, and so I was more than happy to pick that one up. And we worked closely with director Michael Lucas and to try to put out the best package we could do. I mean, one of Michael's thing was like, hey, if I'm going to let you put out this movie, I really want an awesome package. You know, I want good artwork. I want, you know, multiple special features, you know. And, you know, I promised Michael we would do it, and we did. And we worked on this release for quite a while, like we do with most of our releases. I like to say we're kind of the Criterion Collection of shot-on-video movies or movies that people don't really appreciate. You know, a lot of these shot-on-video movies and stuff like that, you see companies just kind of toss them out on DVD, maybe with a trailer or something like that. they won't take time to remaster the prints or do a new scan. You know, they just kind of put it out for product. And, you know, me being that I love these movies so much, you know, I kind of have a rule that I only want to put out movies that I love. And every movie we release, I'm a fan of. Otherwise, I would not release it. I've turned down plenty of movies because I just felt they weren't right for our label, you know, or I just didn't really care for the film, you know. To me, it's about putting out movies that I really like and that I think like-minded individuals will enjoy. And but also giving them that special treatment, you know, trying to treat them with the love and respect they deserve. Because one thing you'll see a lot in the shot on video world and people who are fans of it is there is a lot of this, you know, and I understand it, but there's a lot of this so bad it's good mentality where a lot of people just kind of poop on the movies and call them shit. You know, they go, oh, I got a video camera. And nowadays, you know, people can record movies on their phones. I mean, you know, so everyone,
right.
A lot of people kind of, you know, shot on video movies kind of have a so bad it's good kind of thing to a lot of fans, which I don't think is quite fair, you know, because I think a lot of these movies are good movies, and I think a lot of them have cool, interesting stories. I mean, and the greatest thing I love about shot on video movies is they're made outside of the Hollywood system by movie fans who actually want to make movies. So these are movies made
right.
by someone who actually has a vision, who actually wants to do something. You know, we were talking about the big Hollywood movies previously, and the problem with the big Hollywood movies to me is you have, especially now with all the use of digital effects and everything like that, you literally have thousands of people working on a film. And, you know, it's hard to keep the heart of a movie when you have a lot of people just working on it and it's just their day job. You know what I mean? They're just trying to get
right,
to the paycheck
yeah.
or whatever. Whereas, you know, when you're making your own film, you have a lot of heart and soul, you know, invested into the film. And so does hopefully your cast and crew. And so that's one of the things I absolutely love about shot on video movies. And I try to bring my own heart and soul into every release we do. You know, I try to get as many special features as I can. I always try to, you know, get a new scan of the original elements if I can, you know, and, you know, we just really try to put out a really high quality product for fans of the genre. But I guess, yeah, sorry, we were talking, though, Blood Orgy of the Leather Girls, you know, being our first film release. And I'm happy to expand to films and other genres even. I mean, we did put out a comedy called Stoinky Beach, which I'm a huge fan of. It's completely hilariously stupid. you know, to me, ultimately it comes down to just putting out movies that I really enjoy and that I think other fans of the genre will enjoy, you know, and just giving them proper respect.
Well, yeah, I'm a big fan of shot on video, and so many of them are really, really good. But now the so bad that they're good is not necessarily a bad thing. I was talking about this with a previous guest, that there are some movies that I've watched them, and I'm thinking to myself, why am I watching this? This thing is terrible. But yet there's something about it that is making me keep watching it, so it can't be that bad. And then
mm-hmm.
by the time I'm finished watching it, I'm like, well, it's got something. I just don't know what it is because I couldn't look away. But it's obviously not a good movie, but that's where I think the so bad that it's good comes from. Because, like, and I mentioned this when I was talking with the previous guest, Plan 9 from Outer Space. That movie was so bad that it was good. I mean, and really, I can't think of anything good about it other than the effort they put into it.
I have a huge Plan 9 from Outer Space. Oh, it's one of my favorite movies. I absolutely love that movie. Help work on the re-release. But I hear what you're saying, and I agree that, you know, definitely, ultimately, what is a bad movie? A bad movie is a boring movie. It's a movie that you're going to forget
right.
about or you don't care to watch. And, you know, sure, there's movies that are inadequately made, but we can have fun with them, and, you know, and we can enjoy them with those problems. And You know, everyone, obviously, we all have our own opinions. You know, lots of people think, sure, Plan 9 is a terrible film. To me, I absolutely adore Plan 9 from Outer Space. I think it's actually pretty well made and doesn't really deserve that title. And you look at other movies from the same era, there's movies way worse than Plan 9. I mean, people always ask me, you know, a lot of people ask me, what's the worst movie you've ever seen? And to me, the way I like to say it is it's any movie that reminds me of watching paint dry on the walls, you know, like where it's just like you don't want to sit there and any longer, like it's painful to sit and watch it. So, you know, but the one connotation I don't like about So Bad It's Good, though, is when people really get kind of mean or vicious about it. And you do see that in the shot on video world. I mean, I just interviewed Todd Sheets, you know, the maker of Clownado, about his movie Goblin. And he was telling us about getting death threats for making some of his movies from people, you know, because they thought his movies were so terrible. And I mean, that's a more extreme example of it. But, you know, that happens. Some of these SOV guys who have made these movies, I mean, they've literally been thrown through the ringer for making their films. And, you know, I always like to say, hey, maybe, you know, these critics who are so quick to judge these people, maybe they should try to make their own movie and see how easy it is. And it's actually a lot easier these days than it used to be, you know. But I totally like bad movies too. I mean, I work for Riff Tracks, which is, you know, the people from Mystery Science Theater 3000, and that's my job actually. On my day job, I watch bad movies for a living. That's my job, and I love it. You know, I love it.
Well, don't misunderstand me. I like Plan 9, but I also understand the so bad that it's good thing from my point of view, that I don't use it as, because it's bad. Because to me, I just said that it was good. It's so bad that it's good. So I'm saying that it's good. That's the way that I mean it. Because if I'm watching it, but I'm thinking to myself, this thing isn't really very good, but yet I keep watching it because I'm somehow intrigued by it, well, there's something about it that's got my interest, so it can't be all bad.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Agree.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing I mean. And really, like I was telling somebody else, when I do my reviews, hey, if your movie just getting made, just the effort, you will get 1 star from me. I go on a 5-star system. The effort alone gets you 1 star because the effort of making a movie is worth at least 1 star. And then everything after that gets stuff added on to it. So if you've got really great acting, depending on, you know, how good the acting is and if everybody is a good actor or if there's only one good actor, then it adds on maybe a quarter of a star or maybe a whole star. And then if you've got good directing, something will be added on to it. And so to show you what I mean, I had this guest on who had made this movie that he thought was terrible because he made it. It was one of his first films. Actually, it was his first film. And he thought it was terrible. And I gave it 3.5 stars. And that's on a 0 to 5 system.
Right.
And I told him there are plenty of big name, big budget Hollywood movies that I've only given 2 stars. So yours getting 3.5. So that tells you right there, it's not a bad film.
He was taking himself not too seriously
because it was a funny film and he intended it to be funny, but being too I can't think of the word that I'm trying to get out of my head right now, he's wanting to talk bad about himself instead of looking at how much of an effort he put in. So he's putting himself down. So I was trying to tell him what all was right with it. I was like, I was laughing all the way through that movie. And I haven't done that with a lot of these big budget movies that are supposed to be comedies.
Sure.
So there you go. So if I'm laughing all the way through and that's what I'm supposed to be doing, well, because there was this one film that I watched that somebody made because they wanted me to review it, and I told them that I was laughing through it, and it wasn't supposed to be funny, and then I felt bad because they didn't intend for it to be funny. But I said, well, you know, that's just me. I found it funny. It doesn't mean that it's bad. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I just thought it was funny. And there's nothing wrong
with that.
That's
one thing you gotta. That's one thing I think most filmmakers, you know, you have to learn to get accustomed to. I mean, even myself, it was very hard in, you know, some of my work getting bad reviews, you know, and getting bad reviews because it does happen. You know, people are going to judge your film. You did put something out there for people to watch, and not everyone's going to like what you're doing or even get what you're doing. So, you know, it's tough putting your work out there and getting that bad feedback. But, you know, my thought with that is, hey, I take the good with the bad. You know, I'm happy to get bad.
Yeah.
I'm happy to get good. As they say, any publicity is good publicity. At least people are talking about your work, you know.
I just hate the haters, the ones that they just want to say something bad about every single movie. They in fact, I know that some of them do that because it's the same name on there every time that's giving a one-star review just because they want to get on there and lower the rating on IMDb.
Yeah. No, yeah, there's lots of people who do that kind of stuff. It's terrible. Terrible.
Yeah, and one reason why I get contracted so often, sometimes I get paid, sometimes I don't. Most of the time I do it for free to help out my friends. But one reason why people trust me is because they know I'm going to tell them the truth. I'm not going to be brutal, but if I like it, I'll say I like it. If I don't like it, I'm not going to say that I like it. But I will point out different things in the movie that I like. Because sometimes you don't have to like the entire movie to actually think that the movie was good. You can have certain things in the movie that you like and then like the movie as a whole. And for somebody that's a reviewer, see, I can understand that. Other people, they can't understand that sometimes because they'll be like, how can you enjoy that when you just said that you didn't like the storyline? And I said, because I can appreciate all the other things in it. Because when I watch it, I look at everything. It just comes with being a reviewer, I guess. Like, if there's beautiful landscaping, I can enjoy that. The good acting, I can enjoy that. Good directing, I can enjoy that. Good editing. And I've actually had to explain that one to people because the only time that the general public knows about editing is if it's bad. Because they don't notice it otherwise.
You know, editors
and
are the unsung heroes. You know, editors
are
the unsung heroes. That's actually my favorite part of making movies is editing. You know, if I've edited numerous movies I haven't even, you know, made myself, and I love editing. To me, editing is so rewarding and so much fun. But, you know, it is, you're right, the editors never get the credit. You know, the actors will get the credit. Gosh, what a great performance they did. When they don't really realize that there was a good editor making that person look good, you know. I can't tell you how many things I've edited where there's been horrible performances, but, you know, you edit it right, and people go, wow, they were really good, you know.
Oh, yeah, and you, especially when you see the special features on different films, you can see that when they show different things like, okay, this is how it was originally, and then after it was edited, this is how it looked. Like, okay, so that person did that scene really terribly, and it was the editor that fixed it.
Well, and the music as well, you know, the editor a lot of times lays down the music, especially in these low-budget movies, and the music is also what helps you feel emotions, you know, and using the right piece of music.
Yeah.
You know, all this. I mean, I've always said the editor is the unsung hero of especially low-budget cinema for sure, yeah.
Oh, always. And sometimes, you know, they misstep and it's not so good. But sometimes it can actually, make the film maybe not good, but it makes it like a little bit funny, and then you can enjoy it because every time you watch it, you're looking for those little mistakes.
Sure.
And that's
that
how
boom
you
mic.
Know
yeah.
that. Yeah, because like the original Night of the Living Dead, I mean, there were so many editorial mistakes in that movie that it just became funny. And so now when people watch that, they're watching the movie, yes, but as they're watching it, they're looking for each one of those mistakes as they're watching it. And they're, hey, there's the part where he was pounding, but yet there was no sound until he was done. And then start talking about the other things. I mean, but, you know, and the movie actually was a pretty decent movie with some editorial mistakes. But, hey, you know, nobody's perfect.
Oh, for sure. I mean, to me, Night of the Living Dead is one of the best horror films ever made. I mean, I absolutely love that movie.
Yeah.
You know, their biggest editing mistake was they forgot to put the copyright on the movie, and so it became public domain. That was their biggest editing mistake.
Yeah. Well, like I said.
But
say,
yeah,
no,
you know, everyone makes mistakes, for sure. And sometimes it's time constraints, too, you know. Sometimes you only have... You know, you might only have a month to edit a movie, and there's 200 hours of footage to go through. I mean, so, you know, especially in the low-budget world where no one's making money off of these things. I mean, no one. You know, I mean, even with my company, I'm about to put out my 20th release. I'm not making money. You know, I'm losing money, but I do it because I love it. To me, this is a hobby. To me, this is something I do because I really believe and care about these movies. So, you know, it's no different, I think, for a lot of the other guys, you know, whether they're an editor or even craft services, you know, on the no-budget movies. They're doing it because they really love doing it, and sometimes you just have to work within those constraints that are given to you, you know.
Well, if we're done talking about your label, and I'm not saying that we have to stop talking about it if you want to keep talking about it, but... We can mention a couple of things that are either coming out or they've already been out. You directed something called video short, I think. Classic Christmas Yule Log Fireplace with Holiday Shorts. you directed that. I mean, I'm sure it's a short story, so go ahead and tell us about that.
You know, that was strictly, that's part of one of my day jobs I do, and it was a Christmas compilation I put together for Amazon, and they needed to throw a name on it. I've actually done a ton of programs like that, so I mean, I've done drive-in type programs, cigarette smoking type compilation programs. I've done all types of programs of old public domain footage, and usually they don't throw my names on it, but sometimes they do, and that was one they threw my name on for some reason. So,
excuse me.
But still, I love public domain stuff. I mean, I love editing. So, you know, I did quite a few Christmas ones. I don't know which one that particular one it was, because they all kind of blend together. But you know, I do enjoy doing that stuff. It's a lot of fun, you know, going through all that old archival footage and stuff and editing it into a new program.
Well, speaking of that kind of thing, and you had mentioned working in a video store, that actually was one of my jobs as well. I just didn't mention it at the time. And nice. I actually went from being just a customer service representative to being the manager of the store, and it was the busiest store in northeastern Ohio. And
nice.
I was the manager after working there for only 6 months. Because I was so good at all of the video things and knowing everything about movies, and people would come in and they'd mention some obscure thing and say, hey, what movie was this? And I'd be able to tell them what it was. And so,
right.
and plus I just would help people, like, okay, you're looking for this, then you might want to watch this. Even
mm-hmm.
though I don't particularly like the film, if you say, well, I like war movies. See, me, I don't really care for war movies. I mean, I watch them, and there are some good ones. But if you ask me about a war movie that might be good for you to watch, then I'm going to tell you about the war movies that I like. And I'll say, well, you might like this one because I think it's really, really good. And then
right.
I might mention other ones that I don't particularly like. But mainly that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to mention the ones that I do like. Excuse me. So we're getting low on time, like 5 minutes, because we talked quite a bit about the label, which actually was a good thing. I mean, you seem to be enjoying yourself, so I hope you were enjoying yourself. So I will ask you about at least one more, and there's only like 4 minutes, so just talk about it very quickly. Sorry. High Fear, is that a sequel to the High Eight?
Yeah, that's there's actually two sequels. I believe that's the third in the series. And I just helped out my buddy Tim Ritter. I did some effects on that one. I did some visual effects on that.
And I just like the name of this film, Jurassic Shark. Did you do the visual effects on that?
Yeah, I did do that. I did that for a good friend of mine, Brett Kelly, who's a filmmaker out of Canada. And Brett's an awesome guy. He was actually one of the first people to give me a shot doing visual effects on his movies. First visual effects movie I professionally did was his movie, Prey for the Beast. And so I ended up doing quite a few movies for him. And Jurassic Shark was a real fun one because I got to blow up a guy with dynamite. I remember that shot, and it was a lot of fun doing that shot because, you know, I got to make it nice and bloody and gory as well. So that was a fun one to do, yeah.
I'm going to have to try to see if I can find that because I like the name, and I like
right.
shark movies. And I'm not saying I like all of them, but I like most of these shark movies that I see coming out, and people make fun of the Sharknado movies. I love those movies. I think there's...
Well, I know you're having... I know you're having Madeline Deering on soon, and Madeline Deering's a good friend of mine, and she is obsessed with shark movies. So you're definitely going to talk shark movies with Madeline.
Well, yeah, we will do that because I do. I love shark movies. There are bad ones, of course, but most of them are good. And Sharknado gets a lot of bad press sometimes, but people just take it too seriously. You're not supposed to take it seriously. You're supposed to watch it with
sure.
a grain of salt. Okay.
Right.
Come on. I mean, the name alone, Sharknado. But here's
yeah.
an interesting piece. Here's an interesting piece of trivia just before, you know, we get to the end of the show here that a lot of people don't know, is that Sharknado actually came from the idea wasn't somebody's idea. It was something that actually happened. There was a cyclone twister, whatever you want to call it, that went out over the water, and it picked up a bunch of sharks. Now, what happened, it just
right.
spewed them all over the place, and then they either died because, you know, they couldn't breathe, or people scooped them up, which is what happened to most of them. They scooped them up, and they put them back out in the water. But it actually did happen that they were picked up and they were thrown all over the place. And a lot of people don't know that was something that really happened. It just
right.
didn't happen the way it happened in the movie. Okay, so we got like a minute left. So I'd like to ask my guests to tell people how they can best get a hold of them. So if you would do that.
Yeah, so I'm on Facebook under Tony Masiello, and I have also my website, sovhorror.com, and you can find my email on there as well. And I'm always down to talk shot-on-video horror films with people, and big fan, and yeah, probably the best way.
Okay, good. Well, is there anything you'd like to say in closing? Got about 30 seconds.
Sure. Just thanks for having me, Mac. I just want to tell you, I really enjoy your show. I love all your shot on video movie guests. I first found out about it when you did Dave Castiglione, and since then I've been listening to it, especially all the shot on video people, and it's just so great. I love hearing these people get interviewed and get respect and stuff like that. So just want to thank you for having me in with all these other great guests that you've had. It's definitely been fun talking, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, it was my pleasure, and I appreciate you being on the show, and they're going to be cutting us off soon. So I want to say good night to Tony Masiello, and thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks so much, Mac.
Okay, good night.
All right, good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.